The cycle of Yom Tov Shiurima, dedicated by the family of Dr. Chuck Feldman, Zichrono Livracha, in memory of an exemplary model of dedication to family, community, and Torah education. This Pesach Shiur is also sponsored in memory of Rabbi J. Gershon Neumann Zal, Rav Kalman Gershon HaKohen Zal, Ben Binyamin HaKohen, Visara Aleha HaShalom. So the topic that I wanted to discuss was women in the Haggadah. Now this is really a pretty easy topic because there are no women in the Haggadah. Nary a mention of a single woman, although that doesn't mean that women did not have a role in the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Whereas if I wanted to tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim as a story about women, I could do it. And just briefly to summarize, look at the first source, since the beginning of Shemot, Vayomer, Paro talking, Bialetchem et ha'ivriyot, he talks to the midwives. He says, when you birth the women, Ureitem al ha'avnayim, and you see as the birth is taking place, the avnayim is like, today they're called, what are they called? Spurs? Another thing you can put your feet in on a horse. Stirrups, right. So it's like that. Whatever it was that they did. In Benhu, Vamiten Oto, Vimbati, Vichaya. So this is the instruction that Paro gives to the Bialdot HaIvriyot. Vatir Ena HaMialdot Et HaElokim. Now that's a big compliment that the Torah gives these women. They weren't just working. They weren't just, but they had Yirat Elokim. Now that means something. It means something very special because slavery in Egypt is what knocked Yirat Elokim out of you. Because if Yirat Elokim means, like we'll define it in this particular context, if I define Yirat Elokim as trust in God's promise, right? God promised Avraham Avinu that there would be slavery. The slavery of God for 400 years. And then there would be freedom. So if you trust God's promise, that's called Yirat Elokim. Because you feel the divine in what you are doing. You know that slavery is coming to an end. So these women, even though this was probably a very difficult thing to do, and they had to be nervous about what the result would be, nevertheless, right, now if you look at the Rashi, v'techayena et ha'yiladim, Rashi says, misafkot lahem mayim mazon. They would give them, they didn't just birth them, but they made sure that they would live. They did the opposite of what Paro told them to do. So you have these, the first you have Mialdot. Now when I talk about the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, there has to be somebody who is optimistic enough to want to continue, who said that the existence of Am Yisrael, even though we're in a very bad state in Mitzrayim, nevertheless, it's important, it's relevant, it has to happen. So that's what these women did. Shmot Perek Bet, you remember, Vayelech Yisro mi Beit Levi, Vayikach et Bat Levi. That first pasuk, which is about Amram and Yocheved, right? Amram Yocheved would eventually have a child whose name was Moshe. Rashi, Vayikach et Bat Levi, Parusha Yamimena. He separated himself from her. I mean, they didn't have sexual relations. Mipnei gizerat paro v'chazar ulekacha, because Paro said the firstborn sons will be killed. So they didn't want to have any children. And in this pasuk, what the pasuk says is that he remarried her. Chazar ulekacha. V'zehu v'yelech. And so the verb that's used in the pasuk is v'yelech. He went. What is he went? V'zehu v'yelech. Shalach batzad bito. Oh, another woman, Miriam, right, who gave advice, to her father. Shamralo gzeratcha kasha mishel paro. What you say is, what you do is worse than what Paro did, because Paro gazar lascharim. Paro said just kill the male children. But you, ata, gam kein ala nekevod, you say there shouldn't be any children. There shouldn't be any male or female children. Vechzira, he remarried her. Vasa balikuchim shniyim, this is what Chazal say, that he remarried her. Lakuchim is a word that's used for marriage. Vav hi nebcha liyot na'ara. And so there was a miracle. It was a miracle because even though she was older, she became young, like just like Sarah, Abraham's wife, had a miraculous child, and Rivka had miraculous children, right? She didn't get pregnant at first, and then Rachel had problems with pregnancy and eventually died. So she also had a miraculous pregnancy, which is important because in order for them, Amram and Yocheved, to be models, you can't claim that it was an accident. You know, if she got pregnant, then, you know, if you could say, well, they didn't want to get pregnant, but it happened. So that wouldn't have been what the point of the story is. The point of the story is that it had divine approval, that everybody knew. Everybody, and that's what Rashi is trying to say. Rashi is saying God wanted this to happen, and so it happened. Afin efchaliot na'ara ubat me'ash loshim shana itashen olda bevo ala mitzrayim be'elcha. That she was 130 years old when she had this baby. Okay, terrific. Let's go back to the chumash pasuk bet v'tahar v'isha v'telet ben v'tera oto ki tovu. Right, ki tovu, Rashi says. You see, the Rashi is about the eighth line. Ki tovu, kshenolad, nitmale habayit kulo ora. Ora. Right, the whole house became full of light. Right, light is, of course, a metaphor for anything that's good. Right, it's especially used for Torah. Right, Torah or. Torah ner mitzvah. So the Torah, or pasuk gimel, lo yichla od hatzpino, but tikach lo tevat gomer. I mean, we all know the story. Rashi points out, lo yichla od hatzpino. Rashi wonders about how she was able to hide him for the first 3 months, because Rashi's own experience was that even little babies cry and make sometimes a lot of noise, right? That's, I mean, true until today, I think. So Rashi says, Shemanula hamitzuyi biyom shechzira v'yiladeta l'shisha chodeshim yochad. In other words, they counted. They said, they knew the registry for marriage. They knew they got married on a certain date. So they noted, the police, the Egyptian police, made a note that in 9 months, in 9 months, we're going to show up because that's when the baby will be born, and before that, we're not going to be there. So she gave birth after 6 months. So the first 3 months, the baby was able to cry, and the police didn't show up. That's what the pasuk says. Lo yichla od hatzpino. So we have now another woman who's a hero, and that's Yocheved. Yocheved is a bit a hero of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Again, it's this idea that you have to be optimistic. You have to think there's a future. If you don't think there's a future, you're not going to have children. You're not going to bring children into a world which is going to go through some kind of cataclysm. So, then finally we have Pasuk Dalit. V'teitatsev achoto mirachot b'deya me'yaselo. So, here she is, the sister, Miriam. So, even after the child was discovered and had to be sent away, so to speak, in this ark Of course, the Ark is maybe connected or in thinking. You might think also about the Ark that Noach made in order to save the world. So it's an Ark, it's Moshe. And here's Miriam, right? Here's Miriam, Pasuk Hei, Vatered Bat Paro, Lirchotz Al Yair, another woman, Bat Paro, who then circumvents the edict of her father and the Egyptian police. There's another woman who deserves recognition, right? In recognition in the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Vatiftach vater pasuk vav vatiftach vater eyu. She opened up the little basket and she saw him at hayeled. He saw that the child was crying, but tachmol alav, tachmol, a wonderful human quality that Bat Paro had. Right, so that means that she was involved in saving the Jewish people. The Jewish people needed Moshe. It wasn't just another kid. He was the kid who filled the house with light. And so she saved him. So maybe she shouldn't be the only woman in the story, but she's there. I mean, she's doing something real. She's not an add-on. She knew right away. Pasuk Zayin. The Rashi says, what do you mean, minei v'riyot? Why did she say that? Why did Miriam say to Bat Paro, she should have just said, maybe you'd like me to find a wet nurse for this child. What did you say, minei v'riyot? So Rashi says, where am I? Pasuk Chet, is that what it is?
Zayin.
Minei v'riyot melameid, shehechzirato al mitzriyot habei, Leonak Viloyanak. So Rashi says it must be that the Bat Paro offered this baby to a lot of Egyptian women who would try to feed him. Leonak Viloyanak. Lefisha Yaatid Ledaber Im Hashchina. No, Rashi. Rashi, he knows how to make a big deal out of something, right? You know, I remember there's a story. This story is the source of all stories about Hasidish Rebbeim. You know, the Chidushi Arim, the Geras tell a story about the Chidushi Arim, that the Chidushi Arim, when his mother gave him a bottle, you know, he was like just been born or something. So he told his mother to cover up because he had to make a bracha. So this is where that story comes from. You know, you see, well, that's a good one. You know, you want to be like this. But the other interesting thing about this, Shayati the Daber Mashchina, you know, what's this got to do with anything? I mean, he's a baby, right? Why does Rashi have to stick this in? And not only that, Rashi then continues. Let's look at the psukim. Vatomer la bat paro lechi, vatelecha alma vatekra dem hayelet. Rashi, this young girl went and called the mother. Isn't that interesting? He called the mother, and then Pasuk tet, Vatomer la bat paro, heilichi et hayelet azev enikeu, vani etein etzcharech, vatikach esha hayelet vatenikeu. So it's like amazing. Apparently this was the minhag in Mitzrayim. For the first couple of years of life, you didn't live with the mother, or the adopted mother, but you lived with the wet nurse. So he was brought up as part of Am Yisrael, right? Pasuk Tet, and we just read Pet Tet, but Tomel Abat Paro, yes. Pasuk Yud, Vayigdal HaYeled, Vatavieu Labat Paro, Vayela the Ben, Vatikra Shimon Moshe, Vatomek Imina Mai Meshitiu. So, to some extent, I mean, I know we're not supposed to get too excited, but to some extent, Bat Paro was his mother. I mean, she was the one who enabled the special education that Moshe Rabbeinu received. We don't know what it was, but it developed within Moshe Rabbeinu certain attitudes, which we saw later on. You know, when the two Jews were fighting with each other, when the Egyptian was fighting with the Jews. So he had this kind of sense of righteousness, of tzedek, not righteousness in a kind of an annoying way, but that there was a rightful way to act. And Moshe Rabbeinu had that, even though he was not educated in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. He was educated, I mean, you understand, these ideas existed in Chazal. I mean, like, they could have invented a yeshiva that he went to, but they didn't. They said he studied with Bat Paro. Bat Paro apparently was an exemplary person, somebody who was not regular, right? And he received these attitudes from her. Okay? So now that's the end of those psukim. Now the next one, I mean, I'm sorry that there are a couple of psukim that are missing from on the sheet, but the next pasuk is, I think, Perek Dalet, pasuk Kaf Aleph. Let me just take a look. Well, in any event, it's Perek Bet. Vayoel Moshe l'shevet et ha'ish v'yiten et tzipporet bito l'Moshe. Remember that Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from Egypt, and he ended up in Midian. In Midian, he got together with these women who were shepherding the flocks, and they took him home to Yitro. And then the pasuk says, "Vayol Moshe l'shevet et ha'ish v'yiten et tzipporet bito l'Moshe." Vatelet ben vayikra et shemo Gershon ki amar ger ha'iti beretz nofriyah. Okay, so he had a son, and the son's name was Gershon. Then there's a story about Moshe Rabbeinu getting the charge to go to Mitzrayim. Rabbi Kodesh Baruch Hu told, go to Mitzrayim and you'll save the Jews. But on the way to Mitzrayim, the psukim say, "Vayhi baderech b'malon, vayefkesheu Hashem v'yekesh hamito." Something is very hard to understand. He was on his way, and for some reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. This doesn't make that much. It's not so easy to figure out what was going on, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to a certain amount of effort in order to make sure that Moshe Rabbeinu would be the shaliach that would get the Jews out of Mitzrayim. So why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to kill him? So this is in the next pasuk. Pasuk Perek Dalet Pasuk Kafei. Shtet, Vatikach Tzipora Tzor. She took some kind of a knife. Vatichrot Dorlat Bina. Vatagale Raglav. She circumcised him, the baby. Vatome Kichatan Damim Atali. Veyerif Mimenu Azamra Chatan Damim Lavulot. Whatever those words all mean. But as a result of what she did, Moshe Rabbeinu was saved. Moshe Rabbeinu was saved. So this is the other woman who saved Am Yisrael, who saved Yitzhak Mitzrayim, because she actually saved Moshe Rabbeinu from death. Now, of course, the question is why this happened, and why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to circumcise his son, and why he thought it was more important to get to Mitzrayim than to do the mitzvah at the right time. All of these are questions that are asked by the Mefarshim, but they don't really, it would be too much of a digression to try to deal with all of that. Now, if you go to the second page, skipping the Yalta Shimoni, which deals with the questions that I just asked, like, why did Moshe Rabbeinu do it? Why didn't he circumcise his children, his son? I just remind you of two more psukim. Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Kavet Vayevo Anashim Al Hanashim. Rashi says, the pasuk is summarizing the donations that were given to the Mishkan. And the pasuk says, Anashim al Hanashim, which probably means the men even more than the women. Right? Even more than the women. Kol Nediv Lev, Hei Viyu, and they brought all these kinds of jewels. Kol Klei Zahav, Kol Isha Jayinif, Tunufat Zahav Lashem. Al Hanashim, Rashi says, im hanashim, that the men and the women equally donated to the Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan, the tabernacle, as the Rambam and Rabbeinu Bechai and others explain reasonably, that the tabernacle was the model of Matan Torah. Matan Torah was certainly the purpose of Yitziat Mitzrayim, to get to Har Sinai. Matan Torah was then transferred to the Mishkan and supported heavily by men and by women. It was just like the women were equal partners in Kabbalat HaTorah. Even though it is true that men are obliged with the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, but Kabbalat HaTorah was equally divided between the men and the women. They were both standing at Har Sinai, and they both received the Torah. Now, obviously, women have an obligation to learn Torah, because women have an obligation to do mitzvot. And anybody can say what the Smart said in his introduction, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, that if you have to do something, you better know what you're doing before you go to do it. Otherwise, you will probably mess up. Right? I always tell that story when the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, not the one before him, sent Shlichim to Tunisia. He was like an interesting, he was in Russia, and he decided that he would send Shluchim to North Africa. And North Africa, there was Morocco and Tunisia, so there were shluchim in Tunisia. So the shluchim of the Rebbe decided that what they needed was schools. They weren't really, you know, they had these Allianz schools for Jews. They didn't learn very much about Judaism. The boys went and the girls didn't go. So the Rebbe shluchim said, we have to open schools. So the local rabbanim were very happy. They'll open schools, and we'll send the boys to the schools, and they'll learn things, and it'll be wonderful. So the Rebbe's shluchim said, yes, and we're going to open schools for girls also, because they also have to learn. So the rabbanim, the local rabbanim said, no, we don't send our girls to school. Our girls stay home. And if they go out shopping, you know, they go to Rami Levi, they go with their mothers. They don't go by themselves. So that's how we can't send them to school. So they haggled about that. The shluchim of the Rebbe said, you have to have a school. And the rabbonim, local rabbonim said, you can't have girls walking around the street. I mean, what's going on? You know, the world will come to some sort of a closure. So they haggled, and finally the shluchim said, okay, So he said, how are they going to know what they're supposed to do? How are they going to learn kashrus? How are they going to learn taras and mishpacha? So the rabbanim, the local rabbanim, said, well, they learn from their mothers. They're with their mothers all the time until they get married. But until they get married, they're with their mothers. The mothers, what do? They cook and they live. So they teach them what they have to know. So there was stymied. Finally, the shluchim of the Rebbe said, okay, listen, this is what we're going to do. We'll give an exam. We'll see if they really know what's going on. They gave an exam to girls who were about to get married in Taras and Mishpacha and Kashrus. And of course, otherwise there wouldn't be a story, the results were dismal. I mean, the girls didn't know anything. They didn't know anything about anything. So the rabbanim, the local rabbanim, relented. And that's how they opened schools. That's how they opened schools for women in Tunisia, even before Sarashnira. Right? They opened schools. They opened those schools in Tunisia because the system didn't work. I mean, this idea that you learn everything you have to know by hanging around your mother just wasn't, you know, wasn't viable. It was not a viable system. So, here you have the men and the women were equally obliged in Kabbalah Satorah. That's what I said. They're equally obliged in Kabbalah Satorah, and therefore they were equally obligated or volunteered equally to build the Mishkan, which is a sign that they understood that they were involved in that. finally, Vayad, the last pasuk is Vayad says Akiyo Nechoshet Vekano Nechoshet. We learned this pasuk and this Rashi. You remember that that there was this issue with the mirrors that were made out of Nechoshet, and they used them in order to be attractive, in order to. But again, the same idea that the women again and again in all of these stories, starting from Yocheved, Miriam, Tzipporah, right, the women at Har Sinai, they all expressed this kind of optimism. That's the way Chazal understood it. They were the optimists of, in fact, in this last Rashi, it says, Rashi says, Hayu Holchot, the second wide line in the Rashi, Hayu Holchot Melichot Lehem Machal U'Mishteh, they would bring their husbands who were working as slaves, food and drink, U'Machilot Otam, V'Notlot Amarot, they would feed them, and then take the mirrors, V'Kol Achat Ro'ah Atzmah Ba'Allah B'Mar'ah, U'Mishadalato B'Divarim. So each of these women that said to their husbands, as tired as they are, that they want to have children. They want to bring more Jewish children into the world. And they were the ones, according to the way Chazal understood, since they weren't enslaved to do this heavy work that the husbands were enslaved to do, they were the ones who maintained the optimistic attitude towards the future of Jewish history. And the fact that the divine promise would be kept. So that the amazing thing is, it's very clear that the women played a role. And they played maybe a determining role, because as against the women whose names we know names, right? The Yocheved and Miriam and Bat Paro and Tzipporah, we know their names. We don't know the names of men who were in Yitziat Mitzrayim, except for Moshe and Aaron, who led the charge. So the question is, why is this? Why, my question, why is it that the women are left out of the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, at least the way we have it in the Haggadah, where there is no mention of women? Now you could say, basically there's no mention of anybody in the Haggadah, and you might have a point. Like, but what ideological position is there in not mentioning anybody? For example, so the answer to the question is found by answering a different, similar question. And the different, similar question is, how is it possible that Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned in the Haggadah? The one time that the name Moshe appears in the Haggadah is in a pasuk, where the pasuk is quoted for some other reason, and Moshe Rabbeinu is mentioned accidentally, I would say. So I think it's correct to say that Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned in the Haggadah. Whereas you would think, okay, you know, we're traditionalists. We don't want to mention women too much. You know, that always causes problems. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he should have gotten a byline in the Haggadah. Something, you know, it's like the parish of Yitro, called Yitro. Why is the parish of Yitro called Yitro? It should be called Moshe. I mean, Yitro didn't give us the Torah. And Moshe Rabbeinu was responsible for giving us the Torah. So in that parish, the parish of giving the Torah, we say, oh, let's look at Yitro. Like Yitro. Interesting. It's an interesting question. A Hasidic question, but interesting. So here I want to look at these psukim, if we may. Shmot Imperi Gimel. I want to look at the at Moshe Rabbeinu being appointed the leader, the man who's going to do it. And they we have to learn two sections. The first section is Peri Gimel. Moshe Hayaro Et Son Yitro Chotet No Kohen Midyan. So the first part of the pasuk is kind of prosaic. Like Moshe Rabbeinu, he was a shepherd. I mean, that doesn't sound too exciting. And the sheep belong to Yitro, Chotno, Kohen, Midyan. And they like took these sheep far afield. Rashi says, El Harha Elokim. You see El Harha Elokim? Well, let's look at the first part of the Rashi. Achara Midbar. You see, he took him beyond the desert. Bitrachek min hagezel shelo yirdu yiru bistot acharim. So Rashi doesn't understand why the Torah had to tell us this detail, that Moshe Rabbeinu took them far. Okay, take them far. You know, why do you take sheep far? Because you they have to graze. And if they ate up everything here, you have to go over there. So Rashi says, no, that's not why the Torah tells it to us. Again, that Moshe Rabbeinu was special. He was a special person, even before he became Moshe Rabbeinu. And he was very concerned about Gezel. Then Rashi says, and the words El Har HaElokim, Al Shem HaAtid. What does Al Shem HaAtid mean? About the future? Al Shem HaAtid. What is Al Shem HaAtid? That Chorev, what's Chorev? What place is that?
Sinai.
Har Sinai. But Har Sinai, Chorev, was only called Chorev later. In other words, according to Rashi, there's a preempting of something here. Like Moshe Rabbeinu went to a mountain, to a hill. The hill was really didn't have a name at all. It wasn't a hill that we know about. It was a hill, and it was called Chorev. When was it called Chorev? Later on. Now look at the continuation. Vayera malach Hashem elav belabat eish mitoch asneh. So we know there's a snare on this mountain. What's a snare? What? Yeah, a snare, but what's a snare? A snare is like a little tree, right? Something small. And labat esh mitoch ha-snare. There's a tremendous fire coming out from within the snare. Vayar, Moshe Rabbeinu, he looks and he sees. V'yinei ha-snare bo'er va'esh, va'snare enenu al-kal. He sees something miraculous is happening, at least in as far as you can estimate a miracle. The thing is burning and burning and burning and nothing happens. Right? The tree is still there. The snare is still there. Einenu ukal. Okay. Rashi says what Rashi says. Let's go on. Again, Pasuk Bet. Vayira Malach Hashem Elav Belabat Eish. What's Malach Hashem? What's Malach Hashem? Malach Hashem is somehow he knew that a representative of God was there. This wasn't just a trick of a magician. It wasn't just something that happened, but it was Malach Hashem. Right? And Pasuk Gimel says, Vayomer Moshe. And Moshe Rabbeinu responds in a very odd way. He says, "Asura nava'ere et amare gadol azeh madu lo yivar asneh." That was what's the normal thing to do? To back away, to go away from the fire. You don't go into a fire. I mean, it was only a snare. I mean, what's the big deal? No, Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I want to go to the fire." Right? I want to go to the fire. Vayar pasuk dalit vayar Hashem kisar lirot. So first of all, the Rabban points out, you have to remember, that how did it go? Pasuk Bet. What does it say, Pasuk Bet? Vayar Malach Hashem. Right? Vayar Malach Hashem. What is Moshe Rabbeinu's response to the Malach Hashem? I want to know more. I want to come closer. What does the Pasuk say then? Pasuk Dalit? Vayar Yud Kei Vav Kei. What happened to the Malach Hashem? So the Ramban says, you see that Moshe Rabbeinu on his own was climbing on the ladder of spirituality. He had it in him. He saw a spiritual opportunity and he took it. He went forward. He didn't go backwards. And by going forward, suddenly he was confronting God. He wasn't confronting Malach Hashem, which is a representative of God, but not God.
He's confronting God. And then, Vayomer Moshe, Moshe, Vayomer Hineni. This is like, you know, this is a real conversation. This is the way God talks to man. Moshe, Moshe, Abraham, Abraham. Pasuk Hey. Vayomer, Altikrav Halom. And God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you are not ready to go closer, but shall na'alecha mi'araglecha, take off your shoes. Now you don't have to be a remarkable artist in order to say that this is like Har Sinai, not just like Horev for Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's mamish like Har Sinai. Because that's what happened with the Jewish people. What did Moshe Rabbeinu come down from Har Sinai to tell the people? You have to prepare yourself. You have to be ready. You have to have 3 days. You have to wash yourself. You have to purify yourself. Stay away from sexual activity. He says that's all. You're standing on holy land. What makes the land holy land? What makes it Admat Kodesh? In fact, that Kodesh Baruch Hu is there. Kodesh Baruch Hu is on that land. You can't just walk. You have to be prepared. Moshe Rabbeinu knew. He knew what he was doing. He covered his face. He didn't want to look at directly at God. Pasuk Zayin.
There's
a purpose to this confrontation between God and Moshe Rabbeinu. God has decided to do something about the pain that Am Yisrael is undergoing. Vayered, that's a word that's used also with Yaakov Avinu. Vayered, God goes down, God comes into the world, God is going to act in the world. Latzilo miyad Mitzrayim, to save him. Ulahaloto min ha'aretz ahi el eretz tova rechava, el eretz avat chalav udvash, el rekova k'dani achidi amori, apizi, achivi, v'ayivusi. So Moshe Rabbeinu is the only person who received this information, the verification of the promise to Avram, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe. Moshe is now the bearer of the promise, Beguf Rishon, first person. So there you have it. So you would think that here's Moshe Rabbeinu rising on the spiritual ladder. Right, going from Malach Hashem to Yudke Vovke, God speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu in a kind of an intimate way, you would think that it's a done deal. I mean, like, what could you say after that kind of event? That people argue that Har Sinai, there was no free will because Bnei Yisrael couldn't say no. Like, you know, when you can say no, God says, you want the Torah? So here Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, certainly would accept the charge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him after the experience that he had. It wasn't just, he didn't get a letter in the mail saying, you Moshe Rabbeinu, tomorrow you're in Miluim, go and save the Jews. It wasn't quite that way. There was clear proof of Moshe Rabbeinu. There was clear proof of Moshe Rabbeinu that he could do it. He was moved into the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the snare, which is very similar to what happened in Har Sinai, which again is the name of the place that he was in, which is Horev, right? And validates what Rashi said, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to drink from the Egyptian wet nurses because he was going to be the conveyor of the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. So here's Moshe Rabbeinu. But that's not the way it goes. The way it goes is that Moshe Rabbeinu refuses the job. And if you look here in the next section is Adav Dalid, Vayad Moshe v'yamor v'hein lo yaminu li lo yishbu b'koli ki yomru lo nirei lecha Hashem. This is quite, I think, I would say, quite amazing. But what is Moshe Rabbeinu saying that Kodesh Baruch Hu lo yaminu li? I mean, where did he get that kind of nerve? Where did he get the chutzpah from? And it's not a question of chutzpah. I mean, why would he want to say such a thing? He knew that God was with him. I mean, would he be the option of being a shepherd for Yitro was so attractive? Did he want to leave? I mean, what is it? What could this pasuk possibly mean? So if you look, the next pasuk quoted on the sheet is pasuk Yud. Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, bi Adonai lo ish dvarim anochi, gam mitmol, gam milshushon, gam milaz dabercha, labdecha, ki kvad peh, kvad lashon, anochi. So we say, we assume kvad peh, kvad lashon, it's not a physical disability. But it's a kind of an imagined disability, right? You know, I don't talk so well. I'm not, you know, really good at it. I won't be able to convince them. I mean, the discussion gets a little bit less reasonable. Moshe Rabbeinu say, what do you mean, kvat pek kvat lashon? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Yom HaShem Elah mi samper l'adam, o mi yesum ilayim, o chireish, o pikeich, o iver, halo anochi HaShem, yud kei vav kei. So he says, what are you talking about? If I want you to sound like Paramore, you'll sound like Paramore. I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, God created the world. You think He can't give you a voice? He can't give you a good script to read to Bnei Yisrael? I mean, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. V'atalech, v'anochi yeyim picha, v'horeitich asher tedaber. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, and I will be with you. I'll tell you what to say. I'll give you the script. I'll script you. Is that what they say? I'll script you, and then you'll be okay. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer bi Adonai shalach lo biyatishlach. Vayicharav Hashem be Moshe. This is a crazy argument. This is like a little crazy. And finally, God is angry at Moshe. Vayomer lo Aaron achicha levi yedatichah yedbe yedbe hu begam yinei hu yotzei mikratecha. Oh, so who gives in?
God.
I mean, that's really madness. That's really bad. And then along comes Aaron, and he goes with him every place. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu continues to speak, he does speak. But Aaron is with him. I guess maybe he could explain things, or he could restate them, or not. So I won't explain these psukim in the following way. I won't explain these psukim in the following way. Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, I went through this experience at the snare. That experience at the snare made me into something new. I'm a new person. I'm a new person who's like totally involved in my mind. All I think about is my confrontation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My old language, the way I used to talk, I used to talk to people. I used to be able to speak to them and they would understand what I'm saying. I've lost that, I fear. I fear that now I'm in a different sphere. You know, when I start talking, other things come out of my mouth. I say things about God that other people will not understand. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, I can fix that. I can fix you. I can make you the way you used to be. You'll be able to speak to everybody, and they'll understand you. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I don't want you to fix me." Right? Vayomer bi Adonai shalach na biyatishlach. Send somebody else. I don't want to be fixed. I want to retain. I want to retain the experience of the snare. I want to be a person who is not like everybody else, who doesn't have any longer the language that everybody else has. And finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu agrees. In other words, you could say that this story is the story of how Aaron got promoted. But in order to understand how Aaron got promoted, you have to understand why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to do the job that he was designated to do. And so if this pshat is correct, It turns out that Moshe Rabbeinu really had nothing to do with Yitziat Mitzrayim. And the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu had nothing to do with Yitziat Mitzrayim, because whatever you say about Yitziat Mitzrayim at the Seder, whatever you say why there had to be Yitziat Mitzrayim, why the Jews had to go out, why there had to be miracles, why there had to be tension and running away, all of this must have had some point to it. Right, and the point of Yitziat Mitzrayim was clearly to get everybody at the level of the women that we met up with before, who had faith in the promise. I mean, if you didn't have faith in the promise, what was the point of leaving Mitzrayim or even running away from Mitzrayim? It didn't make any difference. But it was a question of the faith, of getting the faith out. The people who didn't have to have the faith, their faith improved. All of these women, they were not part of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Yes, physically, they went with their families. They went from place A to place B. But the educational value that Yitziat Mitzrayim had for Klal Yisrael was diminished in the case of these women who proved that they had faith in the promise. They believed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to make it happen in a proper way. And this is more true for Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was never in Mitzrayim. He was never enslaved in Mitzrayim. And he lived in a world which was the world of Kabbalah Satorah, even when he was in Mitzrayim. And that's what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu at the Sneh. And that's the explanation of the discussion with Moshe Rabbeinu about who is going to represent God to the Jewish people and to Paro. So Moshe Rabbeinu was never there. He was never in Mitzrayim in a spiritual way. He was always on his own. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't really lead the Jews out of Mitzrayim. And he didn't really organize Yitziat Mitzrayim. And he was not part of Yitziat Mitzrayim. So because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu was not mentioned in the Haggadah, because he wasn't subservient to the spiritual development of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And this is probably also true for the women that we mentioned, each of them exhibiting their faith in the promise that Am Yisrael will continue to exist. And therefore they were ahead of the curve, you know, they were ahead of the curve in Yitziat Mitzrayim, and as a result, were not mentioned. Okay.